Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey there, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the weekly wrap-up edition of the LeadX Leadership Show. Still the smartest way to start your day. Today, I'm coming to you from the greatest city in the world, of course, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is home to great Americans like Ben Franklin, Rocky Balboa, Joel Embiid, and don't go spoiling the party and sending me an email telling me that one of those people is not a real person and the other one is actually from Cameroon. I'm sticking with my story. Great Americans, Ben Franklin, Rocky Balboa, Joel Embiid. And if you don't know that last one, you can just Google around on NBA and his name. And I'm recording this a week early, but by the time you're listening to it, we are only a few days away from Christmas. Merry Christmas to everyone around the world who celebrates it. And December is stressful because of Christmas. I always joke and say that they should move Christmas to like July or August, because the end of the year, you know, in business, it's like wrapping up everything for the end of the year, trying to make your numbers, doing all those annual reviews. Hopefully you don't have to actually do those. You've got to get ready for the next year, you know, your kickoff meetings, your budgets, all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, it's extra busy socially because everybody's doing holiday parties. So you're out nights, weekends. And then, of course, you have to go shopping. And I didn't plan on this being a rant about the commercialization of Christmas, but I guess it kind of is. And, you know, I'm going to play that single dad card again. I mean, maybe I've got a little bit harder than others trying to do it all myself. But I mean, last year was horrible. I mean, I hated it. And I said, enough is enough. I mean, trying to buy unique, thoughtful gifts, not just for my own kids, but parents and siblings and friends and team members and all this stuff. I mean, it just felt like I was working 40 hours a week just shopping. And I said, never again. So this year, I mean, I didn't know what the answer was. I just knew something had to change. So this year I did something different. Everybody, not my kids, but everybody else, got the same gift this year. What one gift could sort of appeal to everybody? Well, it's not really one gift. I decided to put together like a Christmas grab bag. So it's the, I don't think any of my family members and stuff even really listen to my podcast, at least not on the same day. So I'm not spoiling anything. Basically, I got like the Academy Award Best Picture of 2017, and then the Booker Man Prize for Best Book, Best Novel of 2017. And then I can't remember the organization, but someone named the Gadget of the Year, which is actually a Google Home Mini device, which really isn't that expensive. So I think that I got like the Movie of the Year, Book of the Year, the Gadget of the Year, and then just a bunch of chocolate and snacks, and everybody's going to get that. So if they're not a reader, maybe they like the movie. If they're not into whatever movie, you know, won Best Picture, then maybe they'll enjoy the book, or maybe they'll give it to other family members. I don't know. But it's a way to try to be fun, thoughtful, anchor it into the year of 2017. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. I'll let you know if people seem to enjoy that or not. But anyway, I hope, my wish for you is that this Christmas season, you are pausing, you are slowing down. Be grateful and be mindful of your loved ones around you. Hey, our review of the week comes from Jace Hill 1. Jace wrote, I just started challenging myself with this podcast from Kevin, and so far it's been very helpful, pulling in something from each show into my daily work. Fantastic host and great guests. Everyone should listen. Jace, you had me at fantastic host. Thank you for doing that review, and because I read it on the air, send us a note, info@leadx.org, and we're going to send you out a LeadX mug or some other swag and invite you into our private ambassador program on Facebook where you get books and prizes, all kinds of other stuff. So, and please, everyone, the single best thing you can do to make sure we keep doing this show and building that audience is just go leave a rating on iTunes. You can go to leadx.org/subscribe and it will bounce you to the right place. And you just click like 5 stars or one star if you think this is only worth one star. Whatever it is, just click a rating, and that would mean the world to me. And if you do that and leave a review, let us know, and we will invite you into that Facebook VIP ambassador program. Now, the other, I guess, rant of the day is random rant of the week. I just saw that the word of the year, according to the Oxford Dictionary people, is the word youthquake. That kind of surprised me because I don't really remember hearing that word much through the year. But they claim there's been a fivefold increase year over year in the word youthquake. And it's kind of refers to this surge in activism and activity of youth. And I'm not exactly sure what age band they're talking about, but they say it explains the Labour election win of Jeremy Corbyn in England earlier in the year. A similar kind of huge surge in youth voting happened in New Zealand. And it describes a huge age gap. Apparently throughout the world, the youth are much more liberal than the baby boomers and the older generation in almost all ways. And they're just saying that this new generation is very active and has very different views than the generations that have come before them. And that made me think about just this week. I got back from Los Angeles and was out there a couple business things, but also met for the first time a good friend of a friend, and a real wealthy guy, real successful guy. So like we drove into his, you know, gated $5 million mansion. Wonderful guy, wonderful wife, wonderful family. I mean, really enjoyed, you know, getting to know him. And he's retired now. He just manages his own money. And he made his money though for 20 years, not exactly being a hedge fund guy, but he's an investor, you know, he's a trader. So he knows the market, he watches the market. And so, you know, just trying to make conversation, I asked him about the, you know, crazy Bitcoin mania we're going through. Personally, I think it's tulip mania, but who knows? And, you know, he just said, in fact, that's what he said is who knows. I asked him about, what do you think about this Bitcoin? He's like, I don't know. And I said, you know, stock market's trading at an all-time high. Do you think valuations are, you know, at historic highs? Could we be in a bubble or is it time for correction? He says, I don't know. I asked him about, what about tax reform? You know, it's going to be a boon to companies, but it's going to overheat the economy and pile on all this debt. Is this bad long-term for our economy? I don't know. I tried to get him, you know, what are you a momentum trader? What do you think about the head and shoulder patterns, the moving averages? I don't know. He didn't know anything about any investment thing I threw his way. So I asked him, you know, well, what does he know? You know, what kind of investor is he? And he says he's only done one thing his entire life. He invests in the demographics of the baby boomers. He basically said demographics is the number one variable. When you got a lot of somebody all spending their money in the same direction, you buy stocks in that area. And it's just the market, it's bound to go up. And so he followed the baby boomers. And many, many years ago, you know, they were, he kind of showed it's almost like following the surge. I almost viewed it as like an anaconda snake that just swallowed an animal and it's digesting. And, you know, you see these awful pictures of this bulge kind of moving through. And at one point, you know, the baby boomers were all buying homes. So if you bought like the major home builders and home supply, Home Depot and people like that, you made a lot of money. But then as they got older and their kids moved out, you know, they weren't really buying homes. They weren't buying big homes anymore. And they were, with the kids moving out, they had more leisure time. And all of a sudden they were going on vacation. And so things like the cruise industry boomed for a while. Now he's followed the surge and what he's investing in is all sort of health and beauty related. So primarily health, all this new technology, you know, whether it's better hip and knee replacements or whether it's things to make us, you know, look younger. You know, he's finding small to mid-sized companies with breakthroughs through products in those areas. And those companies, I mean, there's high risk, if you know, you never know, but they either do well on their own or they get acquired by the bigger, you know, medical device and pharma companies. So med tech is his big area now. And when it comes to Youthquake or the millennials, and the Youthquake, I think, are younger really than the millennials, but he says, you know, it remains to be seen. So the millennial generation is bigger than the baby boomers, the biggest generation we've ever had. So this investing in demographics is a great idea, but it's still too early to really say where they're going to spend their money because they don't really have any money yet, or they're just now starting to get money. Some people think that the younger generation are going to be renters. They're not going to want to buy and own their own home. My new friend in California said he isn't so sure about that. So it's just too early to tell, but this idea of looking and watching the next generation is kind of interesting. Youthquake, word of the year. So our first question comes from a good friend of the show, TC Thompson, who sent this in at a time when we were back at our episode 200. We're just now getting to it. TC, thanks for sending this in. Let me try playing it.
Kevin. LeadX Junkie TC Thompson here. Congratulations on 200 episodes. It's a great accomplishment. Kevin, I really appreciate that you're often speaking on leadership and development, but I do have a question for you concerning balance. About which is more important, success or happiness?
All right. Success or happiness? That is the question. And TC, you know, it's interesting. I've heard the Dalai Lama himself asked a few times, sort of like, what's the secret to life? And he says, just be happy, or happiness. And for my own three children, I often try to remind them that my wish for them is not to become an entrepreneur or an author or any other occupation. My wish is for them to be happy. And whether they work or don't work, whether they choose to be, you know, a waiter or a scientist, like any of that stuff. Like, to me, I just want my kids to be happy. And if I could turn the clock back, I don't think I would pursue entrepreneurship. And I'm assuming, TC, and everyone out there, that when we're talking about success, we're talking about like classic definitions of achievement and success, you know, money, or maybe it's power for you, all those kinds of things. And to me, you know, I think that I've told the story about the one-armed man, you know, and kind of avenging him is how I got into business. But it certainly wasn't making me happy. And I was pretty miserable, you know, from the age of 20 to 40. Got a few dollars in the bank, but was pretty miserable along the way. So to me, it's all about happiness. And the right way to pursue success is to pursue making an impact. You know, how can I help others? How can I help more people? And the more people you help, the more value you will get back in return. It's almost inevitable. And I think, you know, I don't even think so much in terms of success or happiness. I think about significance at this point in my life. To have success without significance, you just feel empty. So you want to be pursuing significance, which in my view is making an impact, helping others, and success will be a byproduct of that. And for myself, significance even trumps happiness. You know, when I sold the last company 10 years ago, for the last decade, I spent most of my time raising my kids, doing nonprofit work, writing, and I was very, very happy. I knew I would be less happy starting up LeadX. And I am a lot less happy than before I had LeadX, but you know, I want to do something with my life. I want to make an impact. And of course, through LeadX, you know, I'm betting everything that I've made thus far on this new crazy dream of, you know, how do we spark 100 million intentional leaders in 10 years? How do we provide free leadership training and professional development to everyone, anywhere, at any time? And that's what LeadX is all about. And to turn this into a plug, if you haven't already visited leadx.org, I encourage you to do so, because today we put up a new free training video. Tomorrow there will be another free training video. And we're just getting started. All kinds of things we're working on in the background that we haven't announced yet. We haven't even officially launched yet. This is sort of a public beta. So anyway, I think that's a great question, TC, especially this time of the year. As we think about 2017, as we plan for 2018, as we make our New Year's resolutions, as we set our goals, it's to what end? Are we trying to be happy? Are we trying to have success? Or are we trying to be significant? And hopefully you all find a way to do all of that. So here's a simpler question from Tim Whalen, who just says, "Hey, Kevin, what Moleskine journal do you use? What size?" Tim, we all know size doesn't matter. At least guys like to tell ourselves that, right? But I use the, I guess it's just the standard size, the 5-inch by 8.25-inch Moleskine journal. And many of you are probably thinking right now, what is the word Kevin is saying? Is he talking about a Moleskine notebook? And the first thing is realize that most people write it as Moleskine, M-O-L-E-S-K-I-N, as the brand of notebook. You're missing the E. There's an E at the end. The proper spelling is M-O-L-E-S-K-I-N-E. Now, officially, you go to their website and find the right page, and they say there is no one right way to say it. And it's because it's actually a French word. The company, Moleskine, is a relatively recent company, but they got their inspiration from this, the old notebooks that like Vincent van Gogh, Pablo Picasso, Ernest Hemingway, you know, back in the day, before smartphones, of course, all these creative types would carry this kind of leather-bound notebook so they could journal and take down ideas and sketch. And Bruce Chatwin, in one of his letters, he talked about how his favorite journal, which he could no longer find, was a Moleskine notebook from a company in Paris, France. So it was a French word, Moleskine, which is why I pronounce it Moleskine. But people suggest that the French took it from the word moleskin, the English word, meaning the instead of a leather bound, it was literally like the skin from moles, oddly enough. And to make things even more confusing, the company Moleskine today, their headquarters is in Milan, Italy. So you got Italian, you got French, you got maybe English. I don't know if that was England or United States. I say Moleskine, but there's no one right way to say it. Timothy Whalen, thank you for that question. And I looked up timothywhalen.com. Timothy is actually a really accomplished jazz musician. If you want to support a Lead X listener, if you like jazz, visit timothywhalen.com. So the next question comes from Mike Tippetts. We actually had Mike on a show. And he says, "I'm sure the answer is very high, but to your knowledge, Kevin, is there any research or data that talks about the level of engagement in the military versus the commercial or civilian sector?" Mike, great question. I don't know the answer to that on employee engagement. Now, it was just a few years back that I know in the Marines, and I think there's equivalent in other branches of the service here in the States, they started implementing an employee engagement survey. I don't think they call it that. And being that it's a government group, I know I can get access to the data if I ask or use a freedom of information rights or something. And I have been curious about that, but I don't know right now. My guess is that it's actually very high among officers, and it might not be quite as high among enlisted personnel. But I don't know. And maybe if one of our listeners in, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, if you have access or you've seen the reports for your branch of the military on engagement, I'd be really curious about that. Maybe you could share that. And let's see, this will be our last question. Comes from Hadley. Hadley writes, "I am a real estate agent, part-time college professor. At any given time, I have different things that I need to get done. Do you suggest working on multiple goals concurrently, or is it best to go all in on each task or goal one at a time, moving on to the next task only after the first has been completed? Thanks, Hadley." Okay, Hadley, big thanks for this question. And here's the thing, goal setting. I have a goal setting book that's 90% done, and it's been this way for years. Goals, I feel, are like magic on earth. If there is magic on earth, it's goal setting. I mean, goal setting, I used a lot in the first 20 years of business, and I think it really helped me to stay focused. There's a double-edged sword with goal setting because it so focuses your attention that you can be successful in one area of your life and then find out it just killed another area of your life. And I think that, you know, one goal is a lot more powerful than having two goals. Having two goals is a lot more powerful than having three goals. If you have more than three goals, I don't know that goal setting is very powerful at all. So there is like an effect there. When I had only one goal, it made me millions of dollars, but it also blew up my family and I got divorced. These days, I still am a very simple guy. So I only have kind of three goal areas, and I even hesitate to call them goals anymore, but they're daily intent areas. And that's health, wealth, and relationships, health, wealth, and love. So I try to have a more balanced approach these days, knowing that I would be more successful with my health goals if I didn't have the other goals. I would have a better relationship with kids and significant other if I didn't have a business goal, but I want, you know, a more balanced approach. Now, having said that, Hadley, when it comes to your most important task, I think the key is have intentions, have goals in multiple areas. You know, you've got your college professor goals, you've got your real estate goals, but then determine what is your MIT, your most important task each day. And that is one thing. So what is the most important task? Priority means one. There's no word priorities, even though people try to make it that way. So if you're real, and it's not the thing like, if I don't go teach my class today, I'm going to get fired. So that's my most important thing. No, it's your most important thing for your big goal. So it's like if real estate, I'm just making this up. If real estate is really your big dream, your big plan, then your MIT, your first goal is to carve out 30 minutes a day, 1 hour a day, 15 minutes a day, just make it consistent to work on that first goal. It's not like you work on your real estate goal until it's achieved, then go do your professor goal. It's like, okay, I'm going to do real estate for the first hour. That's going to be, you know, lead generation or content, you know, marketing or whatever your one thing is. So that's the way I think about it. And, you know, it's kind of funny that it's my goal setting book that remains undone. It's just because I'm so conflicted about it. Anyway, hey, next week, come on back, of course. Monday is for managers, and I'm going to be talking about tips for first-time managers. Then we've got, you know, I kind of do interviews in themes, and so I'm interviewing some CEOs, and I'm interviewing the CEO of a company called Camp Bow Wow. Now, this is like deluxe doggy daycare kind of thing, and I talked to the CEO about how she uses metrics and, of all things, cascading goals to grow that company. And then I also talked to the CEO of Anytime Fitness. Anytime Fitness is one of the fastest growing fitness companies in the world. And he talks about four company values, which provides a great culture. So he's all about engagement and leadership. Very cool guy with a lot of business success. And then we also have Paul Axtell on how to run effective meetings as our Throwback Thursday. So last note, today, again, there is a new free video course right on leadx.org. To be honest, I don't know what it is myself because I'm recording this a week before this airs, but go to leadx.org, check it out, see if it's something that you can learn from and that you'll want to share with your managers at work. One way or another, I am going to spark 100 million intentional leaders in 10 years, and it starts with you. Leadership is influence, which means you lead at home and at work, whether you have direct reports or not, whether you want to be leading people or not, you have influence. The question is, how will you lead today?